Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1073. Azov on our mind. Ukrainian fascism extends its tentacles. Subtitled Return of the Prodigal Black Son. This is being recorded on May 28th of the year 2019. We have been talking about fascism in Ukraine ever since the ascent to power over the Ukrainian national security establishment and much of its political establishment as well by the OUNB successor organizations. This in 2014 as a result of the Maidan coup. We have been talking about the changing of historical record in Ukraine to where the Nazis are the good guys and the Allies are the bad guys, something that is going on all over the world, by the way. In this program, we are going to revisit the subject of one of the most high profile of the OUNB successor slash Nazi units within the Ukrainian national security establishment. That is the Azov, spelled A-Z-O-V battalion, many of whose members wear the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmet. They use Nazi symbology. They are basically Nazis. They also are receiving arms and training from the U.S. despite attempts by Congress to exclude Azov from such largesse. John Conyers, the former member of the House of Representatives, who was active against the Ukrainian fascists and the Hindutva fascists under Narendra Modi, both of whom, by the way, received the aid of Pierre Omidyar of eBay and Intercept fame, was deposed or ridden out of office behind the hashtag MeToo PSYOP. We talked about that in For the Record 998 and came back to that later. In this program, we are going to be taking a look at some of, at not only the Azov Battalion, but in particular the Azov Battalion's networking with Nazi and fascist groups from elsewhere in the world, including the U.S. This is part of the political agenda of the Azov Battalion, and I subtitled this program, Return of the Prodigal Black Son. The Black Sun is a Nazi symbol that is used by the Azov Battalion in their symbol, in their insignia. It also was worn by alleged New Zealand Christchurch, New Zealand shooter Brent Tarrant. More about him later. The Black Sun is a Nazi symbol. And what we are seeing now, to an extent, is the return to the U.S. and also elsewhere of the very Nazi elements that we took in at the end of World War II as part of the Galen spy organization. They then became part of the Republican Party, which overlapped a gigantic and ongoing covert operation called the Crusade for Freedom, a misnomer if ever there was one. Ultimately, the OUNB successors, the OUNB was projected back into the former Soviet Union, and they were elevated to power for briefly during the Orange Revolution of 2004, and came back to power as a result of the Maidan coup. Now, the Azov Battalion is networking with, among others, members of an American fascist group called the Rise Above Movement, and beyond that, they are networking with Nazis and fascists elsewhere in Europe. And this is part of their agenda. In Fourth Record 1071 and in 1072, I read into the record an article from The Nation magazine chronicling the manifestation of fascism and Nazism in Ukraine and noted that the OUND successor organizations were part of the Ukrainian government because since the end of World War II, they have been part of the American government. And they were part of the American government as a result of the formation of the Christian West, the marriage of the Western allies behind the scenes with the Third Reich. And the OUND became part of the American government because it was part of the Third Reich's government and then jumped to the U.S. courtesy of the Christian West. The New York Times is in full Warren Report mode. They published the Warren Report, and they refuse to even consider the obvious fact of what is going on in Ukraine. Again, that article from The Nation magazine talked about much of it. It could have gone much farther than it did. The, quote, ultra-nationalists, unquote, in Ukraine, or the populists, unquote, as they are being termed, are not just active in the street. They are active within the government, and indeed, the Institute for National Memory in Ukraine and the lustration laws are not only, on the one hand, and in the as a result of the Institute for National Memory revising history to make the OUND and the UPA out to be good guys. The those two organizations were basically extensions of the Third Reich, and the lustration laws make it a crime to tell, to, quote, defame, unquote, either organization, meaning the OUND or the UPA, and both of them were allied with the Third Reich. If one were to say that in Ukraine, one could be prosecuted as a criminal. The New York Times, however, is like the three little monkeys that one sees. They see no evil, hear no evil, and speak, or in this case, write no evil. The New York Times of April 20th of 2019, appropriately enough, this is the Western edition, appropriately enough, Adolf Hitler's birthday, featured an article by Andrew Higgins, H-I-G-G-I-N-S, one of the most stewed and propagandized of their journalists, at least with regard to coverage of Ukraine. And it says, the article is titled, Ukraine Election. Comedian dismissed by president is poised to get the last laugh, unquote. And the president, Mr. Zelensky, is a non-practicing Jew. He also, by the way, is a protege of Mr. Kolomoyskoy, himself a non-practicing Jew as far as I know, but also one of the sponsors of the Dnipro Battalion, one of the Nazi military formations in eastern Ukraine. However, because Mr. Zelensky, by the way, a TV comedian with no political resume, because he is, quote, Jewish, unquote, he is a non-practicing Jew, this is enough for Andrew Higgins and the New York Times. Higgins wrote, again, this article, April 20th of this year, 2019, appropriately enough, Adolf Hitler's birthday. A few far-right nationalists have tried in vain to make an issue of the fact that Mr. Zelensky is Jewish, but the near total silence on his Jewish background has demolished a favorite trope of Russian propaganda, that Ukraine is awash with neo-Nazis intent on creating a Slavic version of the Third Reich. Well, this again is characterizing anyone who faces the obvious truth about what is going on in Ukraine. And I read into the record that Nation magazine article, not because there wasn't anything, not because there was anything in there that was new. We've covered all of that before. But because in one article, there was a compendium of the various manifestations of fascism in Ukraine. And yet, if one says that, and certainly the author, I believe his last name was Glinkin, G-U-L-I-N-K-I-N, operating from memory, he would be termed a Russian dupe or a Kremlin dupe. We're going to come back to the elections in Ukraine later. However, one of the things that is worth noting is that the Azov Battalion, one of whose spokespersons, a woman named Semyonaka, has characterized as a state within a state. It is now actively networking not only with American Nazis and white supremacists, but with others in Europe as well. And this is part of the Azov agenda, so to speak. Hence, I call this the return of the prodigal black son. We are going to read into the record an article by Brett, B-R-E-T-T, Baroquere, B-A-R-R-O-Q-U-E-R-E. This from the Southern Poverty Law Center's publication of October 29th of 2018. Three members of Rise Above Movement arrested in California. Fourth sought as fugitive turns himself in. Now note here, the networking between some members of the Rise Above Movement, some of whose members have been charged with precipitating violence at a Donald Trump rally, other of whose members, not the ones directly networking with the Azov people, but others of whose other members of this organization, were involved with the Charlottesville disturbance in 2017? Time flies when one is having fun. I guess that was 2017. In any event, it is worth noting here, again, that the Azov people are actively and as a matter of political intent networking with their compatriots from the U.S. and Europe. Hence the subtitle, Return of the Prodigal Black Son, because we put the OUNB successor organizations in power, we being the U.S. and also Europe, Germany in particular. And now the chickens, so to speak, are coming home to roost. A violent white supremacist gang known as Rise Above Movement and two others traveled to Europe to celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday and later met with a paramilitary chief there, federal prosecutors say. Robert Rundo, R-U-N-D-O, a 28-year-old Huntington Beach, California resident, 29-year-old Michael Paul Mizellas of Lawndale, California, and 25-year-old Benjamin Drake Bailey of Redondo Beach, went to Germany, Italy, and Ukraine in the spring of 2018, not only to celebrate, but also to meet with European white supremacist groups, prosecutors said in a criminal complaint against Rundo unsealed this week. FBI agents arrested Rundo on Sunday at Los Angeles International Airport, said Catherine Guglotta, G-U-L-O-T-T-A, is spokesman for the agency in Los Angeles. He had been arrested in Central America before being returned to the U.S. To others, 25-year-old Robert Bowman, B-O-M-A-N, of Torrance, California, and 22-year-old Tyler Laube, L-A-U-B-E, of Redondo Beach, California, were arrested Wednesday. A fourth RAM member, 38-year-old Aaron Eason, E-A-S-O-N, of Anza, California, surrendered to the FBI over the weekend. The four are charged with a series of violent attacks during events in Huntington Beach, Berkeley, and San Bernardino, California, in 2018. Prosecutors said the four men used the Internet to coordinate, quote, combat training, unquote, recruit members, and organize riots. Quote, every American has the right to peacefully organize, march, and protest in support of their beliefs, but no one has the right to violently assault their political opponents, unquote, U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna, H-A-N-N-A, said in a statement. The arrests and charges are the second batch filed this month against members of RAM, a violent white supremacist group that practices mixed martial arts and has been accused of showing up for rallies prepared to attack people. Prosecutors in Charlottesville, Virginia, charged four other California men with traveling to that city on August 11th and 12th, 2017, to take part in and attack people at the Unite the Right rally. Michael Paul Mazelis, M-I-S-E-L-I-S, a 29-year-old Lawndale, California resident, 34-year-old Thomas Walter Gillen, G-I-L-L-E-N, of Redondo Beach, California, 24-year-old Cole Evan White of Clayton, California, and Daly are awaiting a court hearing in Virginia. They are also charged with rioting and conspiracy to riot. Rundo is the owner of Rife brand clothing, which promotes white supremacist themes and logos. The FBI believes he ran RAM's now-suspended Twitter account. RAM has been making entreaties overseas, including in Italy, Germany, and Europe. The FBI, Segundo Mazzalos, and Daly met with European white supremacy extremist groups, including a group known as White Rex, R-E-X, unquote. FBI Special Agent Scott Beerworth, in the criminal complaint unsealed Wednesday, noted that Right Brand Clothing's Instagram page contained a photo of RAM members meeting with Olena, O-L-E-N-A, Semyonaka, S-E-M-E-N-Y-A-K-A, a leading figure within the fascist neo-Nazi scene in Eastern Europe. In Ukraine, Semyonaka is an important voice within the militant zone and the national core organizations and the pan-European Reconquista movement, all of which have ties to the notorious Azov Battalion. Beerworth said Azov Battalion, now a piece of the Ukrainian National Guard, is known for neo-Nazi symbolism and ideology, and has participated in training and radicalizing U.S.-based white supremacist organizations. Rundo was filmed reciting the 14 words pledge popular in white supremacist circles. I'm a big supporter of the 14, I'll say that, Rundo told fellow RAM members on the video. The rioting and conspiracy charges stem from a Make America Great Again rally on March 25th 2017 in Huntington Beach. The FBI said RAM members split from the main rally and attacked counter-protesters, and Rundo, Bowman, and Robe hit a number of people, including two journalists. Bailey, who was not charged in California, was also at the Huntington Beach rally, Beerworth noted. The violence was later celebrated by RAM members online, noted a neo-Nazi website, the Daily Stormer, by the way, whose web architect is Andrew Auernheimer, a.k.a. Weave, a prominent and brilliant hacker who is now resident in Ukraine and who was a guest at Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras's party to celebrate Greenwald and Poitras's receipt of the Polk Award for Investigative Journalism. Beginning again, the violence was later celebrated by RAM members online, noted on neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer, and used in solicitation for others to attend the Berkeley rally and combat training to be held in a park in San Clemente. Front page of the Stormer, "We did it, fam," Bailey texted another RAM member on March 25th of 2017. At the Berkeley rally on April 17th of 2017, Rundo, Bowman, and Eason attacked multiple people, Beerworth wrote. Rundo was later arrested after punching a, quote, defenseless person, unquote, and a Berkeley police officer, parenthetically. I don't know if the officer was undercover, but I'm a little surprised. One thing you don't do is attack a cop. I mean, it's just, you can get away with a lot. You don't mess with cops. And I guess this guy did, or at least allegedly attacked a cop. That will get you in trouble. Again, Beerworth noted, the attacks were celebrated online, with Bowman posting photos of himself attacking people and RAM members taking part in combat training. Beerworth also wrote that Rundo and other RAM members participated in an anti-Islamic law rally in San Bernardino on June 10th of 2017. The rally was part of a nationwide demonstration put on by anti-Muslim hate group ACT for America, or Act for America. According to Beerworth, RAM members took part in violent attacks at the ACT event. And more about the networking between Azov Battalion members and their counterparts in elsewhere in Europe and the U.S. It is interesting at one level, hilarious at another level, and absolutely grotesque at yet another, to see people like Andrew Higgins and the New York Times characterizing anyone who tells the truth as a Russian propaganda vehicle or a dupe or whatever. I guess that applies to Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. Both, by the way, not only extensions of the U.S. intelligence community, which is more diverse than some would maintain, but also, in the case of Radio Free Europe, actually has something of a Nazi genesis. As take a look at the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. There is a long article there. Well, not a long, but a food for thought post about David Sarnoff, himself, by the way, Jewish, and his spawning of Radio Free Europe. We noted this in For the Record 1045, one of our interviews with Jim DiGiamio about Destiny Betrayed. Take a look at the front page of the Spitfire List website. And yet, Radio Free Europe, I guess, must be another one of those Kremlin propaganda vehicles, at least according to Andrew Higgins. And among those Kremlin dupes is Christopher Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, of November 14th of 2018. This is titled, Azov Ukraine's most prominent ultranationalist group, sets its sights on U.S. and Europe. Robert Rundo, R-U-N-D-O, the muscly leader of a California-based white supremacist group that refers to itself as the, quote, premier MMA or mixed martial arts club of the alt-right, unquote, unleashed a barrage of punches against his opponent. But Rundo, a 28-year-old Huntington Beach resident who would be charged and arrested in October over a series of violent attacks in his hometown, Berkeley and San Bernardino in 2017, wasn't fighting on American streets. It was April 27th, and Rundo, whose Rise Above movement, or RIM, has been described by ProPublica as, quote, explicitly violent, unquote, was swinging gloved fists at a Ukrainian contender in the caged ring of a fight club associated with the far-right ultra-nationalist Azov group in Kiev. A video of Rundo's fight, which was streamed live on Facebook, shows that the American lost the bout. But for Rundo, who thanked his hosts with a shout of Slava Ukraini, or glory to Ukraine, it was a victory of another sort. RAM's outreach tour, which included stops in Italy and Germany to celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday and spread its alt-right agenda, brought the two radical groups closer together. For the Ukrainians, too, the benefits extended outside the ring. It marked a step toward legitimizing Azov among its counterparts in the West and set in motion what appears to be its next project, the expansion of the movement abroad. We think globally, Olena Semyonova, the international secretary for Azov's political wing, the National Corps, told RFERL in an interview at one of the group's Kiev offices last week. The Rundo fight has received fresh scrutiny following an FBI criminal complaint against him unsealed last week that preceded his arrest. In it, Special Agent Scott Beerworth, again B-I-E-R-W-I-R-T-H, wrote that Azov's military wing is, quote, believed to have participated in training and radicalizing United States-based white supremacy organizations, unquote. Washington has armed Ukraine with Javelin anti-tank missile systems and trained its armed forces as they fight Russia-backed separatists in the east. But it has banned arms from going to Azov members and forbidden them from participating in U.S.-led military training because of their far-right ideology. Interrupting here is where the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Heritage comes in. That is officially the case, but unofficially they have, in fact, been trained and have received weapons, as we have spoken about in the past, including the Nation article that I read into the record in the last 2 weeks. Continuing. It was Azov's Semyonova who hosted Rundo along with fellow Americans Michael Mizelis, M-I-S-E-L-I-S, and Benjamin Bailey, B-A-L-E-Y, RAM members who participated in last year's Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, that was the backdrop for the death of 32-year-old counter-protester Heather Heyer, H-U-Y-E-R. This month in Kiev, she hosted and translated for American Greg Johnson, a white nationalist who edits the website Countercurrents, which the Southern Poverty Law Center describes as, quote, an epicenter of academic white nationalism, unquote. Over the past year, she's made several outreach trips to Western Europe to meet with far-right groups and spread Azov's ultra-nationalist message. and when she is not doing it herself, Semyonaka said, that task is sometimes given to Denis Nikitin, N-I-K-I-T-I-N, a prominent Russian soccer hooligan and MMA fighter who founded the white nationalist clothing label White Rex and has garnered a large following across both Europe and the United States. In November 2017, the two traveled together to Warsaw and participated in the Europe of the Future 2 conference organized by Polish white supremacist group and ally, unquote, and there's a Polish name I'm not going to try, STURMOWCY, which translates stormtroopers, where they were meant to speak alongside American Richard Spencer, Semyonaka said. The Polish authorities barred Spencer from entering the country, and he was unable to attend. Often in Kiev, when he is not traveling through Europe or visiting family in Germany, Nikitin operates as a sort of unofficial Azov ambassador at large and organizes MMA bouts at the Reconquista Club, the ultra-nationalist haunt where Rundo fought, a combination restaurant, sports center, and fight club. Semyonaka said Rundo and Nikitin met there and, quote, exchanged ideas, unquote. In the current climate, with an apparent shift toward nationalism in parts of Europe, quote, it's possible for far-right leaders to come to power now and, we hope, form a coalition, unquote, Semyonaka told Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. And Azov, she added, quote, wants a position at the front of this movement, unquote. The Azov Battalion was formed in May of 2014 in response to the Russia-backed separatist advance sweeping across Eastern Europe. Comprised of volunteers, it has roots in a group of hardcore far-right soccer fans, including many violent hooligans commonly known in Eastern Europe as ultras, unquote, U-L-T-R-A-S. With Ukraine's weak military at the time caught flat-footed, Azov and other such battalions did much of the heavy fighting in the early days of the war, which has killed more than 10,300 people. But it was Azov that attracted those of far-right persuasion, including at least three Americans and many others from Western nations. One such fighter was Michael Skillet, S-K-I-L-L-T, a Swede who trained as a sniper in the Swedish Army and previously described himself as an ethnic nationalist, unquote. The Azov Battalion flaunts a symbol similar to that of the former Nazi Volksangriff. The group claims it is an amalgam of the letters N and one for national, N and I for national idea. It has been accused by international human rights groups such as the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights of committing and allowing serious human rights abuses, including torture. Following a 2015 deal known as the Minsk Accords that was meant to be a roadmap to end the fighting but did little more than turn down the intensity, the Azov Battalion was officially incorporated into Ukraine's National Guard, and its leadership shifted focus from the battlefield to the political arena. The Azov National Corps entered the political fray in October of 2016, appointing Battalion Commander Andrei Beletsky to lead it. Beletsky was previously tied to other far-right groups and in 2010 reportedly said that the nation's mission was to, quote, lead the white races of the world in a final crusade against Semite-led Untermenschen, or subhumans, unquote. The party incorporated two other far-right organizations, including Patriot of Ukraine, which, according to the Kharkov human rights group, quote, espoused xenophobic and neo-Nazi ideas and was engaged in violent attacks against migrants, foreign students in Kharkov, and those opposing their views. As Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty reported at the time, the National Corps' inaugural ceremony arguably had pomp more reminiscent of 1930s Germany than of post-war democracy. It included nationalist chants, raised fists, and a torchlight march through central Kiev. In January, in another flashy ceremony, Azov introduced a new paramilitary force that it calls the National Militia. On a snowy evening, some 600 of mostly young men in matching fatigues marched from Kiev's Central Independence Square to a lighted fortress on a hillside in the Ukrainian capital, where they swore an oath to clean the streets of illegal alcohol, drug traffickers, and illegal gambling establishments. While not officially part of the Ukrainian Interior Ministry or any other government body legally authorized to enforce the law, this is not true. They actually have been granted those authorities. This, again, is Radio Free Europe showing its roots. They have been granted police powers in 31 different cities, and that's not all. While not officially, unofficially, yes, but not while not officially part of the Ukrainian Interior Ministry or any other government body legally authorized to enforce the law, the National Militia has more often than not been allowed to establish what it considers Ukrainian order, unquote, on the streets of cities across the country. In many cases, that has meant attacking LGBT events and Romani camps, actions for which members of the group have not been prosecuted. In other words, it's legal. Continuing, combined, these groups are known as the Azov Movement, unquote, which includes more than 10,000 active members, according to Semyonaka. But Azov's success in growing the movement so far has not translated into much political success at home. While the party has not yet been tested in parliamentary elections, less than 1% of eligible voters said they would vote for National Corps or its fellow far-right group Right Sector, according to June polling by Kiev-based Razmukov Center. These groups didn't fare much better in July when GFK Ukraine asked whether voters would support an alliance of National Corps Right Sector and a third far-right party, Svoboda, and only 2% responded positively. I would note, though, however, that people, journalists, and others who criticize them have been attacked, murdered, and otherwise suppressed, as we have noted many times in the past, including in our last two programs and the reading of the aforementioned Nation magazine article. Continuing. At the same time, however, Azov believes its influence has grown. In an October 29th post on Facebook, Semyonaka went so far as to say that, quote, just within 4 years, the Azov movement has become a small state in the state, unquote. Much of the success has come from recruiting new, mostly young members who it hopes will come to the polls in next year's parliamentary elections. Azov has done so with youth camps, including some that teach children as young as 9, beginning again. Azov has done so with youth camps, including some that teach children as young as 9 years old, military tactics and far-right ideology, recreation centers, lecture halls, and far-right education programs. It has also utilized the reach of social media, particularly Facebook and Telegram, where the group recruits and promotes patriotism, nationalism, and a sport-focused lifestyle. Much of that effort caters to Ukrainians coming of age in a time of war and as illiberal governments rise on the country's periphery, said Ukrainian sociologist Anya Rytsenko, H-R-Y-T-S-E-N-K-O, who researches far-right groups. Azoff has made far-right nationalism fashionable, and they have been strategic in how they portray themselves, shedding the typical neo-Nazi trappings. Well, that's not true. They bear those trappings quite proudly and openly. This has helped them to move from a subculture to the mainstream, unquote. Explaining that strategy, Semyonaka, who has been photographed holding a flag with a swastika and making a Nazi salute, said that, quote, more radical, unquote, language was used previously, such as during the height of the war in 2014, when the Azov battalion needed fighters, quote, because it was required by the situation, unquote. We are trying to become mainstream without compromising some of our core ideas, she continued, adding the, quote, radical statements scare away more of society. And in its recalibration, Azov is not only thinking of Ukrainians, but of like-minded groups abroad. Hence, the addition of members like Semyonaka and collaboration with Nikitin, who literally speak the language of their counterparts abroad. Their English has gotten better, Ritsenko said, referring to Azov members behind the group's Western outreach. Nikitin, who could not be reached for an interview, is a Russian and German speaker. Another thing that has helped, Ritsenko noted, is Ukraine's break from Russia and move toward the European Union has allowed Ukrainians visa-free travel, making Azov's outreach easier logistically. One more time, because we're going to come back to this. Another thing that has helped, Ritsenko noted, is that Ukraine's break from Russia and move toward the European Union has allowed Ukrainians visa-free travel, making Azov's outreach easier logistically. In recent months, Semyonaka and other Azov members have taken advantage of that, making several visits to EU countries to meet European counterparts, according to investigators in RFARL and the open-source investigative group Bellingcat. Apparently, Bellingcat is overtly anti-Russian and basically, between the lines, pro-OUMB successor organization, blog app of the UK. And, well, again, this is RFE, showing its roots. And again, note the visa-free travel with the European Union. Semyonaka participated in and blogged about the Young Europe Forum in Dresden in August alongside far-right sympathizers from groups in Germany, Italy, and Austria. Specifically, she said she has met with those groups that Azov considers close allies. For instance, Greece's Golden Dawn, Italy's Casa Pound, Poland's Stormtroopers, and Germany's National Democratic Party, and Alternative for Germany. Other Azov members have traveled to meet counterparts in Baltic states and Croatia, she said. And I would add that the Baltic states and Croatia are two other places where the elements like the Sejudis organization and Latvian and Estonian fascists, as well as the Croatian Ustashi, were nurtured first within the Galen spy organization and then jumped to the GOP courtesy of the Crusade for Freedom and underlying that, the Christian West Alliance that we have spoken about in, among other programs, 1058, 59, and 1060. We talked about it in 1009 and AFA program 37. We came back to it briefly in our last program, talking about the Christian West. Skipping down. While Azov's cooperation with groups like RAM has been largely welcomed by the group's members, some have found it uncomfortable. Skillet, the Swedish national who fought as a sniper in the Azov battalion, is one of them. I don't mind Azov reaching out, but the ones they reach out to, Jesus, he told RFARL in allusion to RAM. He added that he had recently, note this, he added that he had recently distanced himself from Azov because of that association and others with far-right groups in Europe. Now note this next detail. Skillet, who runs a private intelligence agency in Kiev. Again, Skillet, who runs a private intelligence agency in Kiev, has said his clients, quote, really don't enjoy bad company, unquote, argued that the group has made a mistake by not reaching out to more right-wing conservatives and who could help with, quote, influential contacts in Europe so you don't get branded a neo-Nazi, unquote. But Semyonaka described praise of Azov from foreign ultranationalist groups who are increasingly welcoming it as evidence that the organization is taking the right path. And she said it isn't about to let up. Next, she said Azov hopes to win over larger, more mainstream, far-right and populist Western political forces who, quote, can be our potential sympathizers, unquote. If crises like Brexit and the refugee problem continue, in this case, partnerships with nationalist groups in Europe can be a kind of platform for our entry into the European Union. What I would note here is the recent, quote, distancing, unquote, of Michael Skillet from Azov, and the fact that he runs a private intelligence agency in Kiev. Who or where did he get the money for that? I think Skillet, who was a bright guy, may very well be an intelligence officer himself and part of the Maidan intelligence operation. And I would note that he doesn't mind Azov reaching out. What he doesn't like is the overt Sieg-Heiling street-fighting types. But again, it looks to me like Skillet is altogether comfortable with the networking between Azov and, quote, more respectable, unquote, fascist organizations. Again, I would like to know where the money for his private intelligence agency, unquote, came from. And one more bit about the Azov battalion before we jump back to some of their, one of the people with whom they have networked. We took a look at an excerpt of a New York Times article about the Ukrainian elections. Who do you think was granted status of, quote, security, unquote, or poll watchers for those elections? Once again, from Radio Free Europe or Radio Liberty of March 7th of 2019, deputized as election monitors, Ukrainian ultranationalists ready to, quote, punch, unquote, violators, unquote. This again by Christopher Miller. They patrol the streets of the Ukrainian capital in matching urban camouflage and march in lockstep through Kiev with torches. They attack minority groups, including Roma and LGBT people, and some of them have trained with visiting American white supremacists. They are the ultra-nationalist national militias, street vigilantes with roots in the battle-tested Azov battalion that emerged to defend Ukraine against Russia-backed separatists, but was also accused of possible war crimes and neo-Nazi sympathies. Yet, despite the controversy surrounding it, the national militia was granted permission by the Central Election Commission to officially monitor Ukraine's presidential election on March 31st. There was then discussion of how, well, you know, they can't be allowed to punch people, and the police have to maintain order. By the way, the commander of the National Police, a guy named Vadim Troyan, was the former number two commander, the deputy commander of the Azov Battalion. However, note, even though they threatened to punch, unquote, violators skipping down, and while it didn't threaten to revoke the National Militia's monitoring authority, the commission said it considers violence, quote, inadmissible, unquote. So far, the SBU, that is the Ukrainian Intelligence Service, that basically is operated along the lines dictated by the OUNB, so far, the SBU has not commented on the matter. Again, note that the Azov Battalion Militia, the National Militia, were granted permission by the Central Election Commission to monitor Ukraine's presidential election. So again, note the power that is given to these people and the, frankly, equivocation of people like Michael Skillard. Again, a very bright guy as well as an accomplished Swedish Army sniper. I suspect he is actually an intelligence officer of some kind who funded his, quote, private intelligence agency in Kiev. Where did he get that money? Note that in the recent election that, again, the New York Times says proves that the Russian propaganda probe is untrue, well, the National Militia of the Azov Battalion were granted the role of monitors for this election. Something to be noted, too. And again, note that the association between Ukraine and the EU has given not just members of the Azov Battalion, but others, the free travel to, or given them free travel to other EU countries. We're going to take up the issue eventually, or but really soon, I guess, maybe in our next program. We're going to revisit the leaderless resistance strategy, and in particular, we're going to talk about the shooting at a mosque, or a couple of mosques in New Zealand, allegedly by an Australian national named Brent Tarrant. I say allegedly because he has not yet been convicted. He appears quite proud of what he did and streamed his attack live on social media. But note in a New York Times Western Edition article from March 16th of 2019 about Brent Tarrant, this is by David Kirkpatrick, suspect traveled world but lived on the internet, unquote. His manifesto alludes the visit to Poland, Ukraine, Iceland, and Argentina as well. And again, as The Economist noted in an article about Mr. Zelensky and the Ukrainian electionist from The Economist of March 16th of 2019 called Tragicomedy, three-quarters of them, the Ukrainian people, say the country is headed in the wrong direction, despite the fact that Ukraine has moved closer to Europe. It now has visa-free travel to the EU, for instance. And note the following, again from the New York Times of March 27th of 2019. Ukraine's ultra-right increasingly visible as election nears. Yeah, the National Militia was granted the role of election monitors by the National Election Commission, skipping down. The Ukrainian far-right also appears to have ties in other countries. Australian Brenton Tarrant, T-A-R-R-A-N-T, accused of slaughtering 50 people at two mosques in the city of Christchurch in New Zealand, mentioned a visit to Ukraine in his manifesto, and some reports allege that he had contacts with the ultra-right. The SUFAN Center, S-O-U-F-A-N, a research group specializing on security, has recently alleged possible links between Tarrant and the Azov Battalion. And then the SUFAN Network's Intel Brief of February 22nd of 2019. Intel Brief, the transnational network that no one is talking about. This is the Azov Battalion. In the wake of the New Zealand mosque attacks, links have emerged between the shooter, Brent Parrott, and a Ukrainian ultranationalist white supremacist paramilitary organization called the Azov Battalion. Parrott's manifesto alleges that he visited the country during his many travels abroad, and the flak jacket that Parrott wore during the assault featured a symbol commonly used by the Azov Battalion. And we're going to talk about Brent Parrott, the Skorzeny methodology, leaderless resistance, and how the internet has basically facilitated and amplified not only the Skorzeny methodology, but the possibilities for leaderless resistance. And we're going to talk about Mr. Parrott and gun control, the Turner Diaries. By the way, the Nazi uprising in the book, The Turner Diaries, begins with gun control. The government takes away people's militants' guns so that they can't resist the government. And one of the things that Brent Parrott spoke about was that he was deliberately looking to promote anti-gun activity, which, by the way, New Zealand then promptly did, in order to network with and influence his associates abroad. Brent Parrott and people like him, frankly, are a lot smarter, in my opinion, than, for example, the lady whose name escapes me off the top of my head, but who is the Prime Minister of New Zealand. She promptly helped to midwife a whole bunch of anti-firearms legislation, and that is just what people like Brent Parrott want. The Turner Diaries is about the signaling of, in part, it's about the signaling of a Nazi uprising after the government confiscates weapons. And that is one of the reasons why gun control is playing into the hands of the far right. More about that, however, when we talk about leaderless resistance, the internet, and the Skorzeny methodology at all. Once again, it is just too beautiful to ignore. The New York Times article by Andrew Higgins, April 20th, Hitler's birthday, 2019. Ukraine election, comedian dismissed by president, is poised to get the last laugh. A few far-right nationalists have tried in vain to make an issue of the fact that Mr. Zelensky is Jewish, but the mere total silence on his Jewish background has demolished a favorite trope of Russian propaganda, that Ukraine is awash with neo-Nazis intent on creating a Slavic version of the Third Reich. Yeah, isn't that a silly idea? Of course, the National Militia were granted the role of election monitors, basically a derivative of the Azov Battalion. This concludes For the Record program number 1073, Azov on Our Mind, Ukrainian Fascism Extends Its Tentacles, subtitled The Return of the Prodigal Black Son. This is being recorded on May 28th of 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.